Rick Cerrone, welcome to the Bookshelf Conversations.
Thanks, Ron. Good to be here.
I got to say, I've been a fan of Baseball Digest. I won't say since the beginning because I'm not that old,
No,
but
no.
I've been for a long time. This is the longest running baseball magazine, isn't it?
It is 1942. It's incredible. Print publications are certainly challenged these days for a variety of reasons, even the reading habits of younger people. But we found a business model, I think, and put out a good product, and have been able not only to survive but to thrive.
I was going to say, that was one of my questions is, who is your audience these days, given what you just said about
Well, it's
readers?
clearly an older audience, largely male, but we're making inroads with younger people. I'll give you a funny story. Michael Kay, the voice of the New York Yankees, the television voice of the Yankees, who has a talk show, I sent him a, and he's a good friend, I sent him a complimentary subscription. And he goes, "Hey, by the way, my son Charlie, who was like 9 at the time, every time the magazine comes, he grabs it and goes through it word for word, page for page." So I changed the comp subscriptions name from Michael to Charles K. So we do have younger people, but the thing is, Ron, you have to get engaged with the game, with the players. I mean, when I took over as editor in chief, in the early years, and maybe even today, there's players, Major League Baseball players that had never, they were not familiar with Baseball Digest. And I think that we've made great inroads there with our awards program. If a player has a beautiful feature story with a great opening spread by our graphic designer Rob Wykowski, we make sure we make them a canvas print or of a cover. So we're making real inroads.
Now, again, what you said about the way the magazine business has been back in the day. Now, this is one I pulled out of my attic. This is the March 1969 edition, and March used to be the month where you would rate the rookies, which I find fascinating because I love to go through it and see how many of the names I recognized, how many made it, how many didn't. Back in those days, where everybody was pretty much on the same footing, well before the internet and well before computers were used, the information had to be gleaned a few months in advance. Well, what was the production schedule like in those days?
Well, I couldn't really tell you. I wasn't there. I mean, if you're coming out every month, I would think that it would have to be within the previous month of coming out. But you mentioned the rookies and how they did it in 1969. Our preview issue, which is our March April issue, we still rate, we'll feature the top rookies. We feature 30 of them, five for six divisions. There you go. There's our
This is a new one.
March, April 2025 preview issue with Juan Soto on the cover. And our new issue is out now. It just came out. And it's got Zach Wheeler of the Phillies and Willy Adames of the Giants on the cover.
Now, let me ask you, because I've noticed in the few remaining baseball magazines that are out there, they kind of publish regional covers for. Do you do that, or is this the cover for the whole country?
Excuse me, Ron. We have, but not really. We find that it's a difficult thing to do. I used to publish a magazine back in the late 1970s. I was the editor and publisher of a magazine that started as Baseball Quarterly and then became Baseball Magazine
Which I still have upstairs in my attic.
when we went on the newsstand, which, I learned the magazine business as we went along. But we had an issue back in, I want to say, 1979, maybe 1980, where we had regional covers. Our newsstand distributor was able to break the market down into three regions, and we had an East Coast cover, with Pete Rose of the Philly, or Larry Boa and Jim Fregosi, or Larry Boa and Pete Rose of the Phillies. And then we had Bobby Mercer and Bill Buckner of the Cubs. And then we had, I want to say, Rod Carew and Jim Fregosi, who I believe was the manager of the Angels at the time. I don't remember how that did, but no, we don't have regional covers. We've talked about it. It's a tough thing to navigate in this the newsstand field today.
Now, one of the things that I'm sure you heard a lot of input from readers about, and I'm going to go ahead based on my experience and say complaints. When you went
Oh,
from this size
yeah.
to regular magazine size,
Right,
because when I
right.
think of digest, I think of a smaller
Right.
trim. And why was that decision made, do you know?
Well, that was made, I want to say, back in like the early 2010s, well before the new Baseball Digest was even on my radar. But I want to say it was done because, I mean, hold the small book up again. I mean, that's not, well, that looks a little bigger than the normal old Baseball Digest, but you just can't navigate the newsstand that way. You can't succeed on it. You're going to get lost. So when they decided to go full size and less issues per year, I think it was an outstanding decision. I don't see how I could or we could be successful as a digest size in today's market. I mean, we're the number one selling sports magazine or baseball magazine, number three or four sports. We're in the top 4% of sales of 4,000 titles at Barnes and Noble. I mean, think about that, Ron. Barnes and Noble has almost 4,000 publications that they sell, and we're like number 109 in sales. That's pretty impressive. That's not happening with a digest size. It's just not. And the other thing is, you're so limited. You're so limited because remember, most of the time when it was a digest size, it was newsprint. Basically, in those days, and we didn't know this. Maybe people did. I was a kid when I started reading Baseball Magazine in the early '60s. Those articles were previously written in newspapers, most of them. But in those days, you could do that. I didn't know in New York what Jerome Holtzman was doing in writing in Chicago. I just didn't know that. But now with the internet and whatever, and you could subscribe to the Chicago Tribune or the Chicago Sun-Times. So it's a different world today. And what we do, Ron, what we try to do, when I look at that book that you hold up, and I don't know if you can open it up to the content spread and hold that up, is we try to chronic, no, not that one, the new
Oh,
one.
the new one.
Or compare the two. Page 4 and 5 right there, the content spread. Yeah, there, if you show the whole spread there with the photo, there's the new Hall of Famers. We couldn't do that. We couldn't do that. I mean, we're celebrating the game and we're chronicling the game. If you pick up Baseball Digest from today, 20 years from now, 50 years from now, like I do when I look, when I research our archives piece, you're going to see what the game looked like and what was going on in the game, in a particular year. You couldn't do that with a pulp digest.
And that's one of the things I did appreciate, I still do appreciate, is that you do have writers from all over the country that you might not be aware of. Shirley Povich, the
Right.
legendary writer
Yeah.
for the Washington Post, was in the very first issue of Baseball Digest, along with, I think, I forget his first name, it was Tom Meaney or George Meaney.
Yeah, Tom Meaney, sure.
Tom Meaney. People who were not living in that region where those
Right.
records were available, just like before television, you could never see a player unless they came to your town.
That's exactly
You could
right.
read
Yeah.
about them, but you couldn't see them. Before you came to Baseball Digest, you were involved in Major League Baseball with the Yankees and other teams. What was that transition like going from that to publications?
Well, for me, it was easy because prior to being in Major League Baseball, as I said, I basically, along with another gentleman named Mike Arenstein, who owned the company, I created and edited and published a baseball magazine for 5 years, from 1977 to 1981. And then I went to the baseball commissioner's office. So I kind of gleaned that experience, although doing a magazine in the 70s and doing it in the 2020s is very different because back then, everything, I don't know how I did it, Ron. The writer would mail me the article. I would edit it. I would send it to a typesetter. The type would come back, and my art director in the next office would put wax on the back and lay it out. So you could only be so creative. Now it's all done on computer, and you can make changes in a heartbeat. And I don't know how we did it with photos. Where did we get the photos for Baseball Magazine? I remember them coming from photographers or whatever, in thick envelopes. And I, the one thing Mike Arenstein's great asset, other than he was brilliant, was that somehow he was got this idea in the early 70s to buy up photo collections. I mean, this man and his company had a photo archive that if you sold it today, if it was still intact and sold today, it would go in the millions. I mean, glass negatives. I have a picture on my wall that Joe DiMaggio signed for me that was taken for Life magazine in like 1938. Funny that he signed. Now, this is Joe DiMaggio, not a funny guy. He wrote and I knew him a little bit. His inscription was, "Sorry, I missed getting my picture on the cover of your magazine." Now, that's pretty cool. But yeah, so I had enough experience, but I had to relearn because it's done differently now. Baseball Digest's business model is it's done remotely. I mean, I have my remote office right here. My associate editor, Jim Lachima, who was my assistant in public relations with the Pirates, he has his remote office. The art director, Rob, he has his remote office, and we all communicate. I mean, Jim and I meet personally every week. We have an editorial lunch, which is getting expensive, by the way. But we meet every week, because I don't want to be one of those people just working out of your house, never gets out, never.
Sure.
So, but there's no brick and mortar. And until 7 or 8 years ago, when I started, that wasn't the case. There was an office building, an office in Evanston, Illinois. But that's no longer needed. So things have changed. I had to relearn it, but I'm a pretty quick study.
So it must be, I mean, I always enjoy learning new things. It might take a while, but keeps you youthful, keeps you
Right.
involved.
Sure. Yeah.
So what is a typical day like for you?
Well, it's funny that Baseball Digest is not a full-time job. So I have a PR client. I mean, I'm kind of dialing back what I do after I reached my son's birthday in November. For me, it's being organized. I mean, I'm already, I've got the graphic, the Excel charts of the editorial budgets and what it's going to cost. And I'm already putting things in for September, October, even though the issue that we're full bore working on right now is July, August. So it's coming up with story ideas, it's finding photos, it's and darn it, we come up with some pretty darn good story ideas. I mean, there's a feature, a short feature. This is something I wanted to do. Yeah, you could tell the stories of the stars, and we've got Zach Wheeler, and we've got Willie Adames and others, but what so many people, some people never get to bat in the majors and have a story. I mean, Moonlight Graham, it was immortalized in a movie because he got in an inning and then was on deck but never got to bat, and then it was over. Well, There's a lot of players that were in that position that got in a game defensively, let's say pinch runner, and they never got to bat. Well, we found the last player that was in such a situation that was actually on deck. And his name was Jack Kruger, is Jack Kruger. And this is in, I believe, 2021, 2022. And he went in a game defensively in the ninth inning, playing for the Angels at catcher. And, they were down by a bunch of runs in the bottom of the ninth, and they went 1-2-3. And we have a picture of him that his father took on deck with the batter in the batter's box. And that's as close as Jack Kruger ever got. That's a good story. That's in our current issue. We want to tell all kinds of stories. I love it when Bill Madden, the great Hall of Fame sports writer and a friend back in, met him in the baseball magazine days. He wrote for me back then. Will call me up when he gets his issue, and he does this practically every issue, and said, "Where did you come up with this? Where did you get this story of this guy or this? How did you, you know?" So that's what kind of drives me. So Baseball Digest, Ron, we want to tell interesting stories, some never before told, about the people in and around Major League Baseball.
Well, one of the features that I don't know when this started, but it's been going on for decades, is the game I'll Never Forget. Which is, I always find that fascinating. There are a few regular features that I always enjoy. One of them is the letters from the readers. They're always so informative, and you have smart readers who know their stuff, and your responses to those readers and the statistics you come up with to back up their claims is always fascinating.
Well, let me address that if I can, Ron. Fans speak out. One of my favorite things in the magazine, and one of the most challenging, because sometimes people write in, and somebody recently wrote in that, you made a mistake in an article, blah blah blah, about Dusty Rhodes was a, but the article was reprinted from 1975. We reran the article, right? We have a piece called Archives, where every issue we have a piece from our past, always more than 50 years old. So we didn't go back and fact check what Jack Lang wrote in 1975. So you can't publish every, it's not, you just can't. But some of them are really challenging. I'm working on one now that I'm like, boy, this is fascinating that, how many times has a team given up a 10-run inning and still won the game? Or, how many players have homered, because Matt Gorski of the Pirates homered in his first major league plate appearance. How many times has that happened in major league history? More than you think. I don't think if I asked you to give me a number, you would be close. But we won't do that because that's in the next issue. But a reader, this is kind of funny, and I think only we could do this. A reader says in this current issue, "I love the movie The Natural, but every time I watch it over since it came out 40 years ago, I've always been troubled by what I thought was clearly an error in the movie." Now, to make it quick, when Roy Hobbs, played by Robert Redford, is playing at Wrigley Field, they show two games. The first one, when he breaks the clock, they show the scoreboard, and you can clearly see that his visiting New York Knights are batting first. But in the next game, when they show like a slow motion of his swing, and behind it, the announcer, who, by the way, was the director, Barry Levinson, it says bottom of the third, bottom of the sixth. Well, wait a second. That's got to be a mistake. The Knights would not be batting at Wrigley Field in the bottom of the inning. But the writer told us that a friend of his said, no, in those days there was a rule that the home team had the option of batting first or second. Now, clearly, this is what the guy says.
Okay.
I'm like, that can't be true. And even if it was true, that's not, they weren't using the rule in the movie because number one, I was the baseball consultant on the movie and I didn't know it. Not that I had anything to do with what play-by-play they were putting. And also, I can assure you that Barry Levinson, the director, and Mark Johnson, the producer, had no knowledge of such a rule. But I went to the Elias Sports Bureau, baseball's official record keeper, and they came back and told me that that rule, giving the home team an option to bat first, was on the book or in the book until 1950.
Wow.
But it had not been used before. It had not been used when it was taken out of the rule book since 1913. So that's probably why they took it out. Why do we have this rule when no one's doing it? But where are you going to get that, right? So I found that fascinating, and I love fans speak out because, in our next issue, I won't give you the answer, but this reader finds the 1972 and 70 and 84 World Series were very unique because they both had the same managers. Both teams had the same managers. Sparky Anderson and Dick Williams faced off in
Oh.
72 and 84. How many times has the World Series featured a rematch of managers? Well, we went and found the answer. I will tell you that's the only time when two managers faced each other in a rematch, and they were both with different teams. But that's just the stuff that makes the game so great. You're just not having these conversations for football, basketball, hockey, horse, whatever it might be.
Right.
That's the thing about baseball. The slightest little thing will be interesting 50 years from now.
Well, one of the features that I must admit I have been drifting away from as this time has gone by are the trivia quizzes. Because back in the day, there were only 20 teams with however many players were on those teams. And now you have, more teams with a lot more players. And I don't know who any of these new guys are. So those kind of trivia things have kind of drifted away from me. One
Well,
thing.
we still have a great, a very well-regarded baseball quick quiz, and it's very challenging. I've got
It
people.
is.
I've got announcers and different people in the game. Wow, I feel really great. I got 8 out of 10 or something like that. But you mentioned the game I'll never forget, which I went back to every issue so I could chronicle who the subjects were. Back to the first one in 1969, when the subjects were basically announcers and writers. And then they did Hank Aaron, and then there were more players, former players. And then for a long while, people don't re remember this, it kind of went away. I think from 2000 to 2009, they only did it a couple of times. But it's certainly been back for 15, 20, 15 years. And, it's a player recalling, in his words, the game, his most memorable game. One of the challenges with that is that current players don't want to talk about they think their most memorable game is still to come.
Right.
So
Understandable.
it's very hard. Bruce Levine and Joel Buehrig do a tremendous job with that. They just they're the next one in July, August is going to be Bob Brenly, who when he was with the Giants, and I didn't know this, I only think of Bob Brenly as a catcher. But in one game with the Giants, he was kind of called upon to play third base, which he had played because the catcher got hurt. And he made a record-tying 4 errors in a single inning. What? Most memorable? Well, then he had a walk-off game-winning home run.
Well, even
And
4 errors would be memorable.
yeah, well, so that was a memorable game. And I got to tell you, Bob Brenly, who's a terrific color analyst, I believe for the Cubs. He was just brilliant in his recollection of what it meant, how he got through that game, and how he uses it to motivate players. And hey, I once made 4 errors in an inning. So, And then I hit a walk-off home run. So I'm just really proud, Ron, of what Baseball Digest does.
As you should be, as you should be. One of the things that, again, I really enjoy about going through, especially the oldest of the magazines, like this one from 69, you go through it, and I wish I could go back in time and buy a set of Topps 1970 cards for $13.95 plus shipping. Because to me, it's also like a pop culture, what was going on at the time that are featured in these advertisements, not so much in Baseball Digest, but let's say a Sports Illustrated. Go back, you see the fashion of the day, the carbs of the day, the drinks of the day. I really enjoy going walking down memory lane like that. We've been talking with Rick Cerrone, executive editor of Baseball Digest. Rick, thanks so much for talking with us today, and many more years of Baseball Digest.
Well, I'd love your viewers to go to baseballdigest.com, and there's a subscription link there. Subscribe, six times a year. You one subscription, you get print, you get the current issue in digital, and you have access to every issue digitally in the history of Baseball Digest.
Which is fascinating, going back to the 1940s and seeing the stories of the day. That's the reason I resubscribed, so I could have access to those wonderful archives. Rick, thank you very much, and
Okay, Ron,
good luck to you.
let's do it again.
Okay.